I'm Brian McCreath at Tanglewood. I'm with Kevin Putz, who is here at Tanglewood for the world premiere of a brand new piece. It's called The Brightness of Light, written for Renee Fleming. And Kevin, it's so good to have you here. I've listened to your music for a long time, and now it's great to have a chance to meet you and hear this new piece. Thanks for some time today.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So The Brightness of Light is something that grew out of another piece that you had previously written for Renee. But I'm curious, going back even before that, how familiar were you with Georgia O'Keeffe and her art and her story, and especially her relationship with Alfred Stieglitz?
I would say not familiar at all. You know, I always admired O'Keeffe's work. I knew, you know, mainly the more famous work of hers. And of course, I knew that she lived in the Southwest for many years. But I really, you know, I really didn't know much about her relationship. I knew who Stieglitz was. I didn't know exactly how they were related. So it really did. It was really interesting, actually, to read firsthand, you know, from the source, you know, from her letters and his letters to learn about them. So it was very interesting.
And the original piece that you wrote for Renee was really just about Georgia O'Keeffe. And then you learned, I guess, about Stieglitz through that process. So do I have that sort of chronology right?
Yeah. You know, I was commissioned by the Eastman School of Music to write this piece for Renee, which was so exciting. And I think Renee really sort of identifies as an opera singer. So she was thinking, okay, who can I inhabit as a character? And I found, we had a few ideas, but, you know, I found some quotes online of Georgia O'Keeffe, and I just found them very poetic and evocative, you know, and I could imagine setting them to music. And so I wrote a piece that just really wasn't chronological, but it was sort of five movements, five different songs based on O'Keeffe's letters, and I called that Letters from Georgia. And Renee had the idea that, you know, we should make this bigger. We should include Stieglitz in this and make it more about their relationship. The tough thing was that she wanted to include all the original music in the new piece, and so it took some work, but actually it was a very rewarding process.
Well, from a composer point of view, that sort of, you know, for those of us who don't do this for a living or any kind of crafting like that, it seems like having that material already would maybe make this easier, but you kind of present that as something of a challenge.
Well, it was a challenge, but it was also very satisfying to kind of find these markers, like, okay, where can we have this song? Let's lead up to it in this way. How do we get out of that song? And, you know, I ended up adding orchestral interludes as well. And then we had the idea to add projections, which include O'Keeffe's paintings, Stieglitz's photos, even some facsimiles of their actual handwriting, which is beautiful. Both of them had beautiful handwriting made by Wendell Harrington, this beautiful projection. So now it's sort of a multimedia piece.
Well, and so I want to come back to that multimedia part of it in a minute. But first, you found these quotes, you learned more about Georgia O'Keeffe, you read the letters, she and Stieglitz writing back and forth. Clearly, the words, I'm saying clearly like as if I really know, but you can clarify if you want, the words inspired your direction with music. But the artwork is what we know of Georgia O'Keeffe and to some degree Stieglitz. How much did the artwork sort of just give you ideas musically for what to do with those words?
I think it was there. I think it was there, but it wasn't something that I was conscious of. You know, I was actually, ironically, more conscious of their words and the situations that they were in. You know, from opera composer's point of view, words are just a very, you know, inspiring. You know, and it's just amazing how poetic and lyrical both of them could be in their letter writing. But I think their personalities played into this piece, what I learned about their personalities through their letters. And those personalities are in their work as well. I mean, I think you know, there's a sort of austere boldness to O'Keeffe's paintings, and that found its way into the music, I think.
Well, and I'm kind of reacting to what you're saying, but I also see in Georgia O'Keeffe's painting the sort of melodic contours, I mean, not anything specific, but there's a contouring of the lines you give to Renee, and especially with her voice, just the way that her voice behaves, it actually does kind of reflect to me something of those shadings and colors that Georgia O'Keeffe kind of built into her most famous paintings.
Yeah, you know, I think that O'Keeffe is just sort of all around us, and for Renee, she really did inhabit this character, and she of course read about O'Keeffe. She went to the museum out in, you know, New Mexico, and she So I think, yeah, that her singing probably does reflect what she understands about O'Keeffe. And you know, the thing about Renee that's amazing, I was just realizing this in rehearsal, that you have to sort of do nothing at all. And that's the best thing you can do. You just give her like a very, very simple line and almost no orchestration. And it's just amazing what kind of drama occurs within a few notes. It's really something.
I totally agree. I was actually talking with a friend of mine backstage as we were listening, and sort of, you know, at this point in her career, her voice is at this point where you don't just hear the beautiful instrument, you hear her wisdom in what she does, right?
You hear her wisdom. She has a point of view in every phrase and every note, as does Rod Guilfrey. But really, there's just something with these artists that they don't sing anything just to sing the notes. There's something that they've decided about the line, about the shape of it, and how they're going to communicate it, which is just, from a composer's point of view, you know, just a thrill, really a thrill. I mean, a really indescribable thrill.
Absolutely. The projections you mentioned really are beautiful, and not counter to what some people might think just intuitively. It's not just O'Keeffe's paintings or Stieglitz's photographs. There's a lot going on there, as you mentioned, the sort of stylized versions of their own handwriting, the sort of candids, the little film clip, I think, at one point, that just like comes out of nowhere. Right. It's just their life that you're seeing. But I wonder, you know, as you look at this piece taking on its life as something that will, I hope, be repeated and sent around to lots of orchestras. In those situations where maybe the projections are a little difficult, how much effectiveness does the piece lose if you don't have those projections?
That's a really good question. We had an opportunity possibly to do the piece without the projections. It didn't end up happening anyway, but I'm not really sure. I mean, I think we want people to understand the chronology of the relationship between O'Keeffe and Stieglitz. We're actually, even today, which is, you know, the day before the premiere, we have decided at the last second to add some text in certain places just to clarify where we are in this story. Because, you know, we just want the audience to understand the context of everything a little bit, not too much. I mean, I think the music is supposed to carry it, and the music is what the piece is about. But that's a really good question. I mean, I think we'll have to determine that once we experience this in the dynamic of live performance, which is something you can't predict until it actually happens.
It's that organic quality of any piece of art. When it comes back, it's a little different in whatever situation it's going to be in. Other situations might choose other pieces of music to precede or even follow Brightness of Light. Did you have anything to do with the choice of Enigma Variations on the first half?
I did not have anything to do with it, but I was happy that it was a piece that the orchestra will know, and so they didn't need to rehearse too much, you know? Because, you know, my piece is not easy by any means, although the Boston Symphony can play anything. But I was happy that it was a familiar piece and that they devoted an entire half of the concert to this new work, which I think is really exciting.
When you found out that that was the piece, tell me about your reaction to it, because to me there's something about thematic connection between them and the way that Elgar is expressing friendships and relationships, and that's what Brightness of Light is on a much more intimate single relationship level.
You know, I've been so focused on getting this piece going and like, is it going to sound the way I imagined it? I haven't really considered it much, but it really is brilliant programming, I think. You know, when I really think about pairing them together, it's really interesting. Actually, I look forward, if I'm of sound mind at the time, I hope to enjoy the Elgar and not be so nervous that I'm, you know, but I think it really is interesting programming.
That's fantastic. Well, what is it like to sit there and hear this music in a world premiere? It's happened to you hundreds of times, probably, but what is this experience like for you?
Well, it's torture and it's exhilarating. I mean, you know, it just couldn't get any more. I mean, you know, the idea of Tanglewood and the Boston Symphony, Andras Nelson's, Renee Fleming, Rod Guilfrey. I mean, it's just kind of unbelievable, really, when I think about the last time I was here at Tanglewood was in 96 when I was a student, and I would have had no idea that I would be here in this context. You know, it never gets more comfortable. I never feel any more comfortable. I always feel like it's the first time I've ever had a premiere. I'm, you know, my heart's racing, like pounding out of my chest. I'm freaking out about every little thing, and I'm wondering if people are getting it, if they're feeling connected to the music. I'm wondering if it will all hold together. And really, all it takes is just to get the premiere past us, and then it's like, okay, you know, now I know it will at least communicate. But it really is, you know, it, but it's just such a thrill, and it's a rush. It really is. It's an incredible adrenaline rush, you know, to have these years, months and years of preparation and work for a piece all come down to this one moment where people hear it for the first time. It never gets old. It really is so exciting. It's difficult, but it's also very exciting.
For people who know any of your other music, would they hear The Brightness of Light and say, ooh, something from Kevin I hadn't heard before? Or would they say, ah, yes, Kevin Putz, there he is. That's him right there.
I don't know. You know, I'm not good at that, actually. I'm not good at knowing who I am. And I mean, I try hard. I know when I'm writing, and I feel like, okay, this feels genuine. This feels like me. It feels right. And then I move on. You know, I know when I need to move on. Like, this is good. This feels like me. It feels like sincere music coming from me. But whether or not I have a kind of a style that is instantly identifiable in the way that, like, say, Messiaen or Steve Reich or, you know, composers like that or Beethoven. You just know you instantly, either through the harmony or just the way of the style of the communication. You know immediately. I don't know if it's there in my music. I mean, I think that's sort of for other people to say. Like, maybe people hear it and say, "Oh yeah, that sounds like this other piece." Maybe there'll be some stuff. I mean, of course, in every piece, you know, I try to do things that I haven't done before, because otherwise it would just get so monotonous, you know, to write music. I mean, you always have to try find yourself in a new predicament musically, a sort of a thing that you have to solve, and a musical vocabulary or a world that you haven't really been in before. I mean, it may have a connection to something you've done before, but in many ways it's new and exciting and kind of thrilling just to be trying something new. So I think there's a little of me from the past, there's a little of new me, I don't know. So we'll see what people say.
Yeah, and certainly, I wouldn't ask you to project what anybody else would think, but certainly I get the, but so let's turn that around just a little bit from that perspective of working through it, and you even characterize some of it as sort of solving this issue or whatever. Were there times in writing The Brightness of Light, you're looking at the words you're trying to set and you're just kind of stuck? And were there obstacles like that, and it challenges, or did you feel like this material kind of unfolded for you right from the start?
I think the really exciting thing, which I have not experienced before, was that I was essentially writing my own libretto. You know, I've written three operas, and they've been all three of them with Mark Campbell, wonderful librettist. But you know, he was giving me the words. He's like, "This is what the structure of the entire opera will be, basically." And these are the words that you have to set to music. And for me to be able to go through these you know, hundreds of letters that there's in this beautiful volume that Sarah Greeno annotated, it's just invaluable to have, actually. It made it a lot easier than going to the museum and trying to decipher their handwriting. But to choose my own, you know, to choose the words that meant something to me, that I knew would bring something out of me musically, it was actually quite easy when I started to write the music, because I could imagine this kind of thing, and I could imagine these words in the mouths of these singers. So it was a pleasure to compose it. Actually, what took, I think, the most time was just constructing this text, and, you know, making sense of their lives and the trajectory of their lives together and apart using their words.
Yeah. Kevin Putz, it's terrifically exciting to have this piece here. I love the sound of it. I love the look of it, too, because it is a visual thing, too. And congratulations. I hope it gets lots of performances after this Tanglewood performance. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much for having me here.